all over the world, including here in Canada. Our club hosts letter writing sessions, social events, documentary nights, bar fundraisers, and current events discussions on a bi-weekly basis. So keep your ears open and check out our Amnesty International UBC Facebook page for more information. We look forward to promoting human rights with you.
Good morning. It's Thursday, October 27th, actually. Sorry about that. You're here with Off the Beaten Path. I'm here on 101.9 Vancouver's community radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. We are broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. Sorry about that. So we are broadcasting here from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. For the next hour, I'll be taking you down my path. You can call in here at 604-822-CITR. That's 604-822-2487. Today, we have a special show. Well, not a special show, just a show. The forecast of the weekend, as we like to go through it, it's perpetually partially cloudy. It's Vancouver in October, so I think we all understand that it's going to rain. As tomorrow should be pretty nice, though, with a high of 14. if you have anything to do outside, I'd say get it done tomorrow, because Saturday is 100% chance of precipitation. You know, here on Thursday mornings, I like to talk to you about some of the things that I care about: local news, politics, pop culture, sports. Sometimes we have some interesting guests, some comedians, artists, industry leaders, and, you know, just some really smart people stop by. Today we have Dave Oswald from Design Environment. We'll be getting into that in the second half of the show. And, you know, sometimes on Thursdays it's a little lonely. So if you'd like to call in and talk to me about, you know, something that interests you, just let me know. Coming back from the break, we're going to, this has been a really, really interesting week for news and just lots of things going on. So coming back from our PSA, you hear a lot about just a lot of weird things going on, actually. So be right back with this.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
Every second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 9 is Women in Career Night at the Bike Kitchen. Bring your bike and give it some love in this safe and positive space for anyone who identifies as female or queer. Come learn how to fix your own bike with the help of a female or queer-identified mechanic and volunteers. Plus, there's free pizza. Visit bikecoop.ca for more information.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world. And guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Price is still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge. We're off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
I knew I had a problem.
I tried counting calories, eating and eating.
Nobody else could possibly understand.
We understand. We're Overeaters Anonymous, and we have helped thousands of people stop their compulsive eating and start living a healthy, rewarding life.
With OA, I am living again and loving it.
Start living the life you deserve with help from Overeaters Anonymous. Find us on the web at oa.org.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
I kill you, dog. Yeah, check it out now. Yeah. What mean the world to you? Cause money mean the world to me. I'ma shine for the world to see. Per the V, true the key. F that kid back and true the weed, ma. Wanna roll with the top guns? Got one. Thug pop one. Strap not one. Wanna ride shotgun. Wanna
to shoot shotguns and I got hot ones, but I want a chick that I hop up on the stick, put the pawn and flip, huh? Make sure my cum's going to lick, more sick, but screw that. We're my thugs with the hollow tips, girls that acknowledge it, polish it, after that swallow it. Stand by, baby, where you at, huh? Reach your hand high, you don't suck what? That's a damn lie. Got ran ride, my man ride, my fam tie. So I need a real chick, someone to keep it real with, someone to rob and steal with, someone to share.
Welcome back to Off the Beaten Path. I'm your host, Issa Arian. Welcome back to Off the Beaten Path. I'm your host, Issa Arian. Here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's community radio station. And so just going over a little bit of the weird news that's going on this week or that's come out. So according to the Vancouver Sun, 66% of Canadians support a distracted walking law. The distracted walking law pretty much encompasses anybody who's walking on a public space could be ticketed for using their cell phone or, I guess, playing Pokemon Go or, you know, pretty much anything that they deem distracted. I just thought it was interesting that 66% of Canadians supported this. I really don't think that there's 66% of Canadians walk anywhere. You know, me as an American, I know that most of the people aren't walking anywhere, to be honest. They're pretty much walking maybe to work or if you live in a metropolitan area. But for the most part, most of Americans don't even live anywhere near someplace they'd like to walk to. I lived in Cleveland for 4 years, and I can't remember the last time I walked two blocks. Like, I had some friends visiting from last week, and it's funny because as I moved here, I didn't realize how much my behavior changed in my walking, because we walked across the Granville Bridge and my friends just immediately stopped and said, hey, this is enough. We're calling a cab in the middle of the bridge. So I just think it's funny that it's even discussed that distracted walking laws should be discussed and it came up in a discussion about distracted driving, and I just particularly don't think that that's the same thing. If you disagree with me, I'd like to hear you. However, I'm pretty sure if you're up at 7 a.m. and you're probably walking or running or listening to the radio, you know, getting your day together, you probably wouldn't want a $121 fine for crossing the street and texting at the same time. However, you might be driving in your car and you might want to hit somebody who's crossing the street and you think it's a great idea. Another news, I thought it was interesting this week that the United States Intel has discovered, or maybe Russia leaked, or maybe this is just common knowledge, that Russia has created a nuke that can take out the size of France or Britain twice, as Yahoo reported, and it's named Satan 2. I wonder if that was the real name, or is that like something that the United States was just like, I can't understand these Russian characters, we're going to call it Satan. And since Russia, like, I just can't imagine a bomb manufacturer naming a nuke like, oh yeah, this is Satan, you know? But what do I know about rocket science and the people who create them? Not very much. I just can't imagine that they would name a rocket Satan 2. One interesting this week that came out news that came out this week is Rena Virk's killer from Vancouver Island, is 8 months pregnant. And I just thought it was very interesting that you could have conjugal visits in prison and to the point where you could get pregnant. Like, I just think that that is, I guess, you know, there's lots of people walking around free who haven't committed any crimes that, you know, that can't get pregnant or can't, you know, find a partner to lay down with. And her, I guess what happened was her two inmates can't have a conjugal visit, but her husband, who she married while in jail, was out on parole, and then they were allowed to have conjugal visits, even though under supervision, for me, seems like that is pretty much two inmates. Well, she got pregnant, and now he's back in jail, and it just seems that for the second week in a row, nobody is caring about these kids who seem to be growing up in these dysfunctional homes. Like, how is that baby supposed to have a productive life in any capacity? It doesn't seem possible. I just think that two inmates having a baby doesn't seem like the best situation for a child to be brought in to the world. So in the next, what I thought was very interesting was Apple, for the first time in 15 years, their revenue fell. And as they sold 3 million iPhones less this year than they did last year. And I was wondering if people think that that's the beginning of the end of Apple's technology domination. I would say that, you know, maybe if, as we see in an athletic wear with Nike and Under Armour is going to be providing baseball uniforms, and they already provide lots of college football uniforms. But unlike technology, their largest competitor doesn't blow up in people's hands. So I think that Samsung at this moment isn't really ready to take that next step to take over Apple's dominance in the market, because iPhone is the number one selling item of Apple. You know, they sell computers and everything, but really what drives the revenue is the iPhone. So I wonder if this is an opportunity for other technology companies to come up and take over. Well, I guess that'll be determined in the future. Going back to the kids. Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but Vancouver coined the phrase meter maid, and I'll tell you a little bit about it when we get back.
To unlock the bathroom door and talk about Crohn's and colitis. They're lifelong diseases. They're on the rise among children under 10, and they involve severe abdominal pain, chronic diarrhea, and for many people, life-altering surgery. They're mired in secrecy and embarrassment, ignorance and fear, which only adds to the pain. It's time to make it stop. Crohn's and colitis. Make it stop for life. Visit crohnsandcolitis.ca.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Electronics Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path. I'm your host, Issa Arian. You're on 101.9 Vancouver's community radio station. We're broadcasting from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. And I don't know if you know this, but Vancouver invented the phrase meter maid back in 1976 when they hired and unleashed the city's most powerful, most hated profession, the parking attendant. But in 1976, the times were a little bit different. The women were a little tougher, and the times, it just seems that they were a little out of touch because they had to make their own uniforms and were encouraged to wear high heels. I just don't think that that would be generally accepted for parking attendants now. I saw the last person who gave me a ticket, and I hate that guy. And actually, nothing would make me feel better than having that guy wear high heels walking around all day giving tickets, because maybe then he would think twice about giving me a ticket at 11:57 when my meter ran out at 11:56. It's almost like finding out about this story and reading a little bit, the Vancouver Sun did a profile on 40 years of meter maids, which is, I guess, is like the most riveting history that went on yesterday, you know? But I thought it was pretty interesting how the job has evolved. Like, it was exclusively women who were meter maids in the early 80s and late 70s, and they would take breaks at lunchtime and go to English Bay and just hang out. And it doesn't seem like, from the quotes from the story, it doesn't seem like they were too pressed about giving tickets. Doesn't like just like now. I feel like if I don't even own a car and I hate meter and I hate a parking attendants, because if I am driving a car to go and I leave it at a meter and run into 7-Eleven or I run into any type of store, McDonald's or anything, as soon as I come out, if I don't pay the meter, I have a ticket. As soon as, at $35, automatic. And it just seems that they are everywhere and nowhere at the same time. But there was an interesting quote that I thought one of the women had. She exclaimed that when the people who complained most about their tickets were the people who could pay the most in the financial district, with the Jags and Rolls Royces, I quote, were the people who fought the tickets the most and tried to cheat the system by rubbing out the chalk lines when they were adjusting, when they were trying to track to see the two-hour limit, except for the parking attendants were a little smarter than those guys, and they would put Smarties, which I call M&Ms, on top of the tire. In the next story, I thought it was interesting that a UBC study, you know, we broadcast here from UBC, and we do a lot of good research here at UBC. And one of the studies shows that 1/3 of kindergartners have emotional issues as a result of high housing prices. Now, I thought this was interesting because I don't talk to a lot of kindergartners, but the few kindergartners I have spoken to, never one of them have ever brought up how they fear or for a future that they can't afford a house in Vancouver. So also, three of three kindergartners I've ever met are emotionally unstable. I've seen kindergartners cry over spilt milk, literally spilt milk. I know personally, as a kindergartner, I've cried because I went to bed too early. I've cried because I went to bed too late. I just don't really believe that. I don't really know what kind of study you do where you're trying to figure out about the emotional stability of a kindergartner and you expect some type of normalcy. You know, however, one of the things that they did bring up was that parents being more stressed and bringing that back into the home is causing their children to become a little bit emotionally detached from adults. But I think that's probably because the kids play on the cell phone and on the iPad too much. I walked into a classroom a few weeks ago, and I saw a kid playing. He was playing a game on the iPad, and it was being projected on the screen, and there was 23 other kids watching. Now, I think that that is probably the real issue. Vancouver, and as kindergartners are worried about housing, so are Vancouver's, I'd like to call them down and outs, because, you know, nobody, I don't think anybody really likes the word homeless or to be designated as homeless, but Vancouver is to shut down tent cities on East Hastings, as, and it's just interesting because it's happening during a week where international housing experts are coming to the city for a conference. While this is, while interesting, because I walked past one of these tent cities, as they call it. I just call it like a neighborhood where people are camping out. But this particular tent city on East Hastings has been up since June. And some of the residents believe that, while not ideal, being in a tent city with a really small community, and it's fenced in, is really better than being on the shelter or in the street. They feel that they have a little bit of security. You know, they feel they have a little bit of ownership, as, you know, they're not living in other people's filth. Like, if their tent is dirty, then it's their own dirt. And one of the residents, his name is Taz, he had an interesting quote. He said that, at least when I'm in my own tent, I can actually close my tent door, and as thin as my walls are, I'm still private from the rest of the world, and the mess that I'm living in is my own, and that's something I can live with. And I really think that that's an interesting point. Like, we like to think of homeless people as not as people, and, you know, the humans, just like everybody else, they want their own space, and, you know, a shelter or a temporary housing, temporary, or a flop house, you know, those aren't their own spaces. You know, if you've ever been in one of these shelters, you've ever been in one of those flop houses, you know, those things are not, they don't feel like home. One of the, you know, I thought the Vancouver Sun, they wrote the story, and they talked about how there's been 66 police calls to the tent city since June. Now, I don't really think that that's a lot. They said there's been 4 assaults since June, you know, and it's right now it's October going on November. So that's really 5 months. So in 5 months, they've had 4 incidents of assault in a tent city that houses around 80 people, 80 displaced, you know, I'm guessing, you know, people who are down on their luck. And so I feel like they've making the problem worse than it is. I feel like there's another solution besides just clearing the tent cities, so that I'm guessing it's for the aesthetic, because, you know, you're not really providing alternative options for these people. And so I like for people to think about that, as maybe on the east side and walking around, or maybe as you see, you know, some down and outs, just talk to people, and you'll find out that everybody's got a little bit of humanity, and you might gain a little bit of humanity yourself by, you know, opening yourself up and meeting some new friends. So when we come back, we'll be talking about a little bit about design, environment, and some of the work that David Oswald has been doing and is currently doing. So stay tuned.
Citizen-driven internet policy. Open Media believes in keeping the internet uncensored, open, innovative, secure, and providing universal access to fast and affordable networks. If you would like Open Media to keep campaigning for citizens and internet policy, you can donate to them at openmedia.org or openmedia.ca. You can also find them on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+.
Hey, eating sustainably is important,
but not always affordable. Luckily, Sprouts has not one, but two on-campus cafes that serve organic, earth-friendly, locally produced meals at prices that don't make you want to cry. Stop by Sprouts Cafe in the basement of the Old Sub or Seedlings Cafe on the top floor of the Graduate Building above Kerner's Pub. If you want more information about our cafes, initiatives, or are interested in volunteering, visit our website, ubcsprouts.ca, like our page on Facebook, or give us a sneaky follow on Instagram at SproutsUBC.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
Try to stop me, it's gonna be some dreadhead niggas in your lobby. My shooters come for free, so if one more label try to stop me, it's gonna be some dread.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path. I'm your host, Issa Arian, here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's community radio station. And so we'd like to have some guests. This morning we have David Oswald. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Design Environment and some of the work that you've been doing?
Well, my name's Dave Oswald. I'm from BC originally. I just moved back here actually about a month ago.
How do you like it so far?
Love it. Love BC, man. It's a good place to be. Best place to be in Canada, that's for sure. I was in Montreal for about 11 years, doing some grad work at McGill. And then at the same time, I was originally, before that, a producer and director. So I was working on museums and science centers and stuff like that, content. Visual experiences, but my training is in environmental science and systems design. So when I was out there, about 2005, I guess I arrived. I had been working for other companies and stuff here in Vancouver, doing big stuff, and I decided that it was time to, you know, put out the shingle, do something new, and started this company, DE Design and Environment, which is basically a design and environmental consultancy, and now a technology company. So that was 2005, and then since then we just kind of developed.
Okay, so you started the company in Montreal, correct?
I actually incorporated here.
Okay.
In 2004, I'm literally like filed. So it's a BC incorporated company, but I mean the business was kind of forged out in Montreal. So
okay, so what do you think is the difference between besides French, obviously, business here and in Montreal?
It's different, you know. It's different. Everything's different. But, I mean, Montreal is Montreal. That's the one thing you understand. Have you been to Montreal before?
Yeah, when I was in eighth grade.
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody out there who's been to Montreal before knows or has lived there. It's like, there's like the island of Montreal and then there's Quebec, you know. Okay. It's almost like it could be a different country in some respects. But, you know, it's still, even Montreal is quite a bit different than anywhere else in Canada, and particularly BC, in the sense that, you know, it's still Latin-based, you know, people are more emotive, things are a little less, you know, straightforward, direct, there's a language issue, so it's, I don't know, I mean, I think there's one thing that's for sure is people are fairly open-minded there, but people are really open-minded in BC, you know.
Yeah.
So for instance, if you want to, like, you know, start something new and say, hey, I want to like start a company and it's going to be based on, I don't know, an app for sharing, I don't know, who knows, whatever, you know. People say, yeah, cool. They'll give you the airtime here right away. And you got an opening to do that. Even the short time that I've been back here and like whatever, like really a couple of weeks of actually doing business stuff because I've been working. I've had like killer meetings, you know, say, hey, we should get together and have a coffee with a guy from Vancouver Economic Development and the Vancouver Economic Commission. People are just like, yeah, let's chat. Whereas it's not as easy. It's not like that. It could be an Anglo coming from outside to a place, but at the same time, it's, you know, there's a very creative vibe in Montreal. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's what I heard, particularly on my music show. We get a lot of music out of Montreal.
Beautiful.
But more so than any other part in Canada, more so than Toronto, Montreal is, it just seems it's got a lot of creative minds going on in there. So
it's crazy, you know, there's a lot of creativity. You know the Dead Obies? You heard them before?
Yeah.
Perfect example.
So like, how has Vancouver, you know, in the short time you've been back, how has that been able to help shape your business?
Well, you know, when I left in 2005, you know, I was like, it was time for me to leave. I felt like I was at the top of my game at that time. Here, we were doing big stuff. We were doing like $20 million science center projects in Saudi Arabia for princes and stuff like this with this company I was with. You know, we were rolling. But, I mean, it was time for me to leave. And Vancouver at that time kind of felt stale for me in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's just me personally, but that's like 2005. So I went out there and, you know, got jazzed up with the creative scene and doing some cool stuff at McGill with the folks I was working with. Coming back, though, you know, like, I mean, I just find it's almost like this city is a different city for me now. You know, like, it's a lot more in the green area. So, like, let's say in the environment area. For one, the time has changed. So 10 years have passed. So 2005, 2016, 11 years. You know, now, like, I mean, stuff's hot. You know, this is where we're at right now. Everybody kind of, like, knows that this is the direction we got to go in. So sustainability and sustainable development is not, like, a fringe thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I was trying to pitch banks back in 2005, BMO, on, like, sustainability programs and so forth. And they just kind of, like, you know, they looked at me and they're like, oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah, we know we recycle. We have a recycling bin, you know, and this kind of thing. Whereas now, I mean, same conversation. They're, like, they got a chief sustainability officer. You know, it's like a serious risk factor. They're losing lots of money or gaining lots of money as a result.
Yeah. I totally understand, because before I came back to UBC, I was working at a bank, and we had, starting in 2011, we started off with the big sustainability initiative.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting to see how particularly the city of Vancouver, you know, has helped shaped some of those things, and just for businesses here in the city, as it become part of everybody normal everyday activity.
For sure. You know, I had a meeting yesterday with the Vancouver Economic Commission. I just to, you know, say, hey, how's it going? You know, show them what I'm doing and stuff with my team. And it was great, you know. But so, I mean, Vancouver's set to take advantage of this, like, huge kind of explosion that's happening right now, like, for sure. And then people that are here, because kind of you get it. It's part of your DNA if you're from here or you live here. You know, you can't help but ignore, like, recognize. You wake up in the morning, you see the mountains and the oceans, just what you're surrounded by, right? So you're thinking about it. The one problem, though, here, though, I find, and this is what we talked about yesterday, is, and this is where Montreal, like, has got it covered, is bringing, like, creativity and cool design thinking, creative thinking to these issues, you know? I was giving the example yesterday of, like, there's a conference here called the Globe Conference, Global Opportunities for Business and the Environment. Great conference, get the world leaders coming together to talk about this stuff, and, you know, major speakers, good thinking, but, man, is it not, like, jazzy? There's no, like, chutzpah, you know? You need some life to that thing. Whereas in Montreal, you got, and that's been around since the 90s, 92 or whatever, when it started. It's been around for a while, you know? Whereas the one, there's a conference in Montreal called C2 Montreal, Creativity and Commerce. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's from you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, so, I mean, that one, I did a talk at that last, in the spring. Great, it was a great gig and great, it's a great conference. But, I mean, they get it. I mean, they got, like, I mean, they just make it an experience, you know. You're talking about serious stuff. You know, you got, like, keynote speakers like Richard Branson and, you know, whatever, Kevin Spacey, then all the business leaders from GE, like a wide array of all these kind of, like,
from all different types of
industries coming together. But then the production they put into that, You know, this is where they get it. It's like they put on a show.
Yeah.
You go there and it's like, man, I just had an experience.
Well, I've read multiple Richard Branson books, and I feel that that guy doesn't do anything without putting on the show.
He's a full-on showman. Yeah. His actually his talk there. I've seen him a few times, different things, and because we get around to these conferences and stuff. And that one wasn't great. You know,
okay,
it was like an ad. I was a little disappointed actually one, but cool guy. I mean, huge respect to what he's done, and, and just like if you want to look at. You know, for me, the definition of entrepreneurship is like, what's the one characteristic, if anything, like if you're a human being and you say, I want to be an entrepreneur, and people ask me this all the time, and I say, what should I do? Or like, what's important? I'm like, okay, if there's one character trait that will beat anything that you have, it's perseverance.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not quitting. And that guy is like, just doesn't quit.
You know?
Like, and takes on like taking on Coca-Cola, like Virgin Cola. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's insane, but also like ballsy, right?
Yeah,
at the
when he took on British Airways, just from reading the book, you know, that's from reading his book, as told the story from him. So like it's so I understand his, you know, his biases in the storytelling.
Yeah.
However, you know, he's created in lots of different areas, and so
Now he's an interesting guy, and like. So back to like why is Vancouver like interesting now? I mean, it's just to me, it's like just ripe for growing what I started out there. So I almost feel like it's just getting going.
Yeah.
I mean, although it's been a while, I've done big stuff. I mean, we work with the UN as a client and go to the COP conferences and do climate change adaptation work. And, you know, with small island developing states in the Caribbean, we help them out, work with them. IFIs, international financial institutions, do big design stuff like science centers, and that stuff keeps on coming. Work with corporations and kind of innovative strategy. I got to go to Mexico in like 2 weeks, I guess, mid-November to keynote a conference, mini conference, a small conference for banking.
Okay.
But it's on bringing biodiversity to banking, so like ecosystem services and valuing ecosystem services and how that plays a role in how you run a bank.
Yeah.
Right? So in Mexico, you can imagine it's like there's a lot of this natural resource-based economy to some degree anyway. They've got a lot of petroleum.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, in those cases, they're confronted with like pretty severe shocks to their natural resources.
Yeah.
So climatic variability, storms like Hurricane Matthew just like destroyed Haiti, you know.
Yeah.
So imagine if you're running the Haitian bank, right, and you have no idea what kind of risk exposure you have for, like, say, I don't know, agricultural companies that you're financing. Man, you need to know that stuff, right? So I'm going to be working with them and just saying, well, I mean, they're all bankers, right? So I'm an environmental scientist. So I come in, well, you need to think about, like, what kind of data, what kind of analytics do you have to tell you about what kind of, like, if there's a storm, what's going to happen to agriculture, for instance? You know, and how can you buffer against that kind of stuff? Like, for instance, let's not cultivate agriculture on, like, steep slopes where there's no vegetation where you're going to get a storm. Like, that's the kind of stuff that we do, right?
Okay. So I guess in that respect, so we... talking about it a little bit earlier, but the federal government wants to go forward with the LNG, and that means putting the pipeline through some First Nations land and putting the ecosystem of, I guess, where salmon spawn at risk.
Yeah.
You know, Petronas, the Malaysian-owned oil company, says that there's no risk.
Sure, no risk.
Yeah,
zero.
Yeah. No, I don't expect anything. You know, it's, I guess, the Canadian environment, I guess the Canadian EPA, they also I guess, relayed that message that, you know, with the precautions that Petronas is going to take, the risk is low.
Yeah.
However, I don't really particularly believe oil companies when they say risk is low. So,
yeah.
You know, so how would you go about valuing that, you know, particularly in the interest of the environment, you know, of the people, you know, not just for First Nations or the economic for the company, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, you know. So it's this, like when you do a project like this, and I'm not going to, like, for one, I haven't read the environmental impact assessment for this project, so I can't, like, fully speak like I completely understand what's going on. I got to do that. It's just I've been busy. You know, when you do a project like this, you need to do an environmental impact assessment. So that's a fairly, in this case, would be a comprehensive report. So you need to, like, do a pretty big study as to, like, you know, what are the valuable ecosystem components in the area. So it could be like an endangered species or salmon spawning territory, all this kind of stuff. And then you write this report, and you're supposed to do extensive stakeholder consultation, particularly with First Nations now, and get everybody on board. And then based on that, you look at the report, and the there's a decision that's made whether or not it should go ahead. So now, does that report, does that kind of process in Canada right now take into consideration some of the stuff that, you know, I'm talking to you about, which is like, let's look at the cost and benefit of the full valuation of ecosystem services? Like, absolutely not. Like, it doesn't. So one thing we need to look at, is there no risk? Like, that's you know, that's just stupid. You can't say there's no risk. Like,
there's always risk.
There's always risk. I mean, there's a risk when I walk outside and I could fall down. I mean, come on. Yeah. Like, seriously? So with that, what I would like to see, and this is kind of where I think we're, I don't know, I don't want to jump all over these the federal government, but, you know, like, you come in campaigning on real change and a complete change. I mean, what I'm talking to you about is the way the world is moving. You know, this is where, you know, we need to look at these things. So one thing in this case, you'd say like, okay, well, what are some economic values of the coastal zone of British Columbia in terms of like tourism, cultural heritage, all this stuff, just pure intrinsic value of the natural ecosystems? Like, has someone gone and done that? Like, and gone and analyzed that and looked at that and say, and then we could look at it and say, well, look at the value we're deriving from pristine ecosystems out here in a pristine situation, like all the people that come from around the world and A, want to buy all our real estate, and secondly, come and do tours up to, you know, Haida Gwaii and all these kind of places. Bella Coola just had a spill in Bella Coola.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, you know, I think we need to do that. I think you need to have data. You need to have data to do that. You need to have some sort of system. This is the kind of stuff we've done in the Caribbean with the IDB. I'm doing a proposal right now to do that for the coastal zone of British Columbia, and actually in collaboration with UBC, actually.
Okay.
It's still early stage with that one, but that kind of needs to happen. What I would like to see, though, you know, is at least reference to these types of things when you're making. Like, I'm not going to say I'm an anti-oil person, you know, or an anti-industry, because I have a lot of, like, I've done a lot of work in the energy sector. You know, I never thought I would when I was 21, but, you know, you get exposed to the reality of the world. And done a fair bit of stuff in Alberta. But, you know, if we're going to go down this direction of approving, like, pipelines and so forth, you got to do it with a vision going forward, you know, which is, like, and you got to articulate that. And so this is what, like, and this stuff would should be part of that. Say, okay, well, we're going to approve, but we're going to invest in, like, you know, a trust or some sort of agreement. Why not, like, a partnership with a local NGO? I would say maybe David Suzuki Foundation or WWF, the IUCN. There's a million of them out there. Well, not, no, it's some, about five good ones, I would say. They should be working and doing the monitoring.
Yeah.
Right? And we're going to finance them. We say, we're going to pay you to monitor this stuff. So it's not us monitoring to tell everybody that there's no risk, right? You gotta do that these days. You gotta spread out the social license. So, I mean, that kind of, I'm not getting that messaging from what they're saying, you know, nor am I getting, like, what's our energy strategy and our energy future? Yeah, sure, they say that, but let's see the document. Okay, we're going to, like, rely on natural gas as an export for now to keep the economy in Alberta going. But, you know, are we going to be investing a significant proportion of the revenue we're deriving from that activity into renewables, into hydrogen? Like, I have not heard hydrogen mentioned in any of this debate for, like, ever. Like, you know, like, what? Come on, seriously?
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, what do you think that Canada can do to, you know, continue to be a global leader in the idea of sustainable and sustainable design? And
Canada, like, I don't know. I don't know about the government, okay? Yeah. Like, I mean, I'll tell you the same thing I said with, like, when Harper was in power. I'm not going to jump on him neither. It's like, you know, the government's the government, you know, they got to appeal. So, like, even as, like, people were giving such a hard time, like, 5 years ago, even 3 years ago at Rio Plus 20, their Harpers did it. I was like, okay, we're not the government. So Canada is more than our government. It's the individuals that live here, the companies that are here, the students, the researchers at places like UBC. So I think we need to kind of, like, for one, we're just lucky, for one. We're just sitting on this huge bank of, like, natural capital.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and anybody that comes here from outside of the country, like, realizes that, like, what a fortunate position to be in. So we shouldn't waste that. You know, like, we should, I think anyway, as much as possible, focus our energy on the innovation that's required to develop, to decouple environmental degradation from economic activity or social activity as well. Like, that's the real challenge, is, like, how do we develop economically or have economic activity and not have it degrade nature or in the environment. In fact, it should even enhance. It should be regenerative, right? So with that, I think, like what we do anyway, what my focus is on is look at where the demands are, like where, given the expertise that myself and my team have, which is like really, you know, smart environmental science people and engineers and then creatives and all that kind of stuff. And we look at places that, you know, there's going to be, the problems in the world are this, some of them anyway, rising sea level in coastal zones like Caribbean, for instance, increase in climatic variability, degradation of ecosystems, more risk in terms of investments as a result of this, the need for clean water, growing populations and food security requirements. So then how do you like look at those problems and then say, try and like find good solutions, inequity in these countries as well. So our job is to go, we fly in, we get flown in to, you know, to like Guyana, we were there 2 weeks ago, to work with them to say, okay, well, how do we integrate data sets to give you better decision-making tools, right, for GIS. So, I mean, this is one way is to, like, find where the problems are, and those problems could be in Ghana, they could be in Guyana, they could be in Chile, they could be wherever. You know, we've got a lot of experience in Canada dealing with natural resources and so forth, and we just happen to have a good education system. So there's, like, an export opportunity there for, and there's an innovation opportunity as well. I also think we kind of like, we got to have a legit leadership position. So I'm curious to see what happens when COP22 in Marrakesh. Because I tell you what I think is going to happen. I mean, you can go to these conferences as a federal government and say, look, we've changed. You know, after having just been elected in November and then going into this last year in Paris, Canada's back and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, well, that's great. So, and 1 year is a short period of time to make significant change. I'll give them that. But, you know, we have to have like legit results. You know, we need to go there and say, okay, if we're going to be engaging and continuing with our activities, which we need to do in the energy sector, this is what we're going to be doing in terms of where we're going to develop on the renewable side. This is where we're putting our resources into biodiversity conservation. We're going to become a global power in environment industry. You know, this is what we're going to do. Not just, and Harper was like, we're going to be a global energy power. Well, sure, we can be a global energy power. Why not? Capitalize on the resources that we have, make it clean as much as possible. At the same time, like, invest as our intellectual resources in becoming this, you know, kind of green ninjas in the world, you know, like this kind of stuff, this kind of thinking. I'm not totally seeing that right now, you know, Ida, and people aren't stupid. That's the issue. And this is what we saw with this. You mentioned you saw the youth forum.
Yes.
In
Ottawa.
In Ottawa. Was it Ottawa?
That's where it was. Ottawa, yeah.
Yeah, like you got to go into those situations. I felt like there's the guy who's calling Justin out on like what are you doing with our country, and you're a hypocrite. Like, you got a lot of criticism from you know, various angles, right? And it's like you gotta go into the situations like ready with like good responses, you know. And I didn't see it there. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
like he wasn't expecting it.
He wasn't expecting that. No, I mean, it's obvious. Like, he's just like, you know. And I'm here to dialogue. I'm here to engage in dialogue. Of course, that's an important part. But you know, like, I mean, that's. You're running the show, right? Yeah. Like, you gotta, so responding in that situation, I mean, like, what is the guy who is making the argument, which is a legitimate argument, what is my job going to be in the future? I mean, you gotta look at, well, where are we going in the future? This guy could have been, I don't know what his job was. Maybe he was, you know, a trade, like he could have been a welder or something like that. Well, say, well, we're going to transition into a new economy, which will still have industrial requirements. You know, we're going to be laying the infrastructure for liquefied hydrogen. You know, we're going to need to, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thinking, that kind of stuff, because that's going to, like, that's going to paint the picture for future generations to say, okay, well, this is where I'm going to go. This is where I have to aim my boat, right?
Yeah.
So the other problem with that was, I think they just didn't, risk communication was a disaster for the government in this situation. The other part was the job churn issue, right? When Marneau came out and said, young people need to be prepared with job churn. And that's just negative, you know?
Yeah.
I live job churn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My job is job churn, like dealing with it. Why? Because I run a business and we're, you know, we're doing contracts all the time. It's a job churn is part of the reality of it. But you know what? Job churn is awesome.
Yeah.
Why? Because, I mean, like you, I have a lot of flexibility to run our company in a way that kind of makes everybody happy with their work. You know, if I have some people say, like, can we finish a gig? And they want to go to Thailand and go rock climbing for like a month or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. Have fun, man. Like, and then that's job churn. Why? Because they did their job. They're finished. And then, you know, they're going to go do their thing for a month. And I'll make sure that we line something up when they come back or whatever. You know, that's just the nature of the economy we're moving in. Mm-hmm. So there's one way to look at it, say, well, we have to prepare for insecure. The other thing is to like, well, how can I self-actualize myself more in this? Like, me personally, I'd rather have job churn or like this kind of setup than be working in the same place, the mill, from like the time I'm 21 to the time I'm like 65 or whatever. It's just, you know what I mean? It's a different world we're living in. But it's the messaging that's that that these folks, I don't think they really understood.
Yeah, so. I often think that it's the communication that, particularly that the government and the people who are in the government fail to communicate to, particularly to the younger generation.
Yeah,
but like so, I thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, sure, no problem. And if those are out there, if you have any questions, you can check out www.design-environment.com or just Google my name and tweet me at design at David_Oswald or at Desenv Inc.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll put your information into the description of the show. So when you go on CITR.ca and you're looking at the show, you'll be able to you can just forward your, you can just go on and find David and see some of the projects he's been working on. I'd like to thank you. So that is our time here at CITR 101.9. You've been listening to Off the Beaten Path for